To the Geek Generation, episode 5. I'm going to start off today's episode with a short apology. I said on the last show that this week not only would we be reviewing Inception, but my guest host would be Dave Palmacci. That unfortunately did not work out, but on the positive side, I am joined by perhaps a more appropriate co-host for the show we have planned, as we're going to delve heavily into the news that came out of this past weekend's Comic-Con, and the reporter that handled a lot of that information for the site is our resident comic book expert, Brian Lipsitz. How are you, Brian?
Good, how are you?
I am doing great today. Thank you for joining me.
No problem. I'm excited.
Excellent. We have a lot to cover, so we're going to jump right in. The first thing I want to do is take a look at the listener emails. Our first one actually doesn't answer our question, but was just a note from a fan that I appreciated, and it's from Jaron Rabideau, who sent in an email last week saying that his favorite, or that the movie he would like to see converted from an 80s TV show into a movie was Alf, and we had that ongoing nice joke during the first half of it, which was good. Jaron wrote in, "I'm listening to your podcast now and laughing my ass off. One of my coworkers asked me what I was laughing so hard about, and all I could say was Alf." So I appreciate that our show is giving some offices and some individuals entertainment. That's really our whole goal. So I appreciate that, Jaron. Thank you very much. Answering our poll question from last week, who do you want to see cast as Wonder Woman? We got several emails in for that one. The first coming in from Zach Nunes saying, "I would have to say Angelina Jolie can do a lot of action." What do you think, Brian?
I don't know. She seems a little too... I would pick someone a little younger, but that's just me.
I agree. Plus, I don't know. I think she's almost the easy cast.
Yeah, it's true. Like everyone thinks, ooh, action, Angelina Jolie, let's put her in it. I don't know. It's a little typecast, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, and a lot of people, like, she's the go-to girl for who's the sexiest woman in Hollywood and all that. Yeah. And I got to be honest with you, she doesn't necessarily do it for me.
No, not so much for me either. I mean, she's a very attractive woman, but
oh, no doubt.
But yeah, I fear I hear you on that one.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a good choice, I guess, but it's not one that I would necessarily make.
No.
Email 2 comes in from Mike Volpe. He says, "I think a complete unknown should be cast. I personally am tired of seeing the A-listers getting all the major superhero roles, just so the movie studios can rake in some big money because teeny boppers want to see their movie crush in spandex. This is a great opportunity for an unknown girl who can act to step up and become a major player in Hollywood. So, in the end, my answer is simply, give it to someone deserving and new."
My reaction, that's a good point, but the problem is that you have to try to sell it to the movie execs, and they're going to be like, "We don't know who this person is," and they look at the bottom line of, I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tough decision to make when you go with an unknown. They are more or less doing that with Thor, with the casting of Chris Hemsworth.
Very true.
But at the same time, Marvel has built up this franchise, and now they have the other movies to piggyback off of.
Yeah, Wonder Woman would be a hard sell where it's something that's not connected to anything. You're already throwing it out there, so I don't know how much of a chance Warner Brothers would want to take on a complete unknown.
Right.
So
And no fault of Mike's. I mean, he did answer question, but at the same time, I feel saying an unknown is almost a cop out.
Yeah. You said it, not me.
Yeah. I mean, yes, you could honestly say I would like to see someone new in the role, but at the same time, it does feel like you're can't find anyone specific that's out there already and try and put that in there.
I had two people, and I don't remember who they were, so we'll see if anyone else mentioned them.
All right, well, maybe it'll jog your memory by the end of the emails, too. The next one comes in from our friend, Mr. Todd Tiuli. He says, hello, sir, digging the show in more and more every week, except for that last guy. Apparently, he wasn't a fan of Wally co-hosting, because Wally laid down the gauntlet, although I think that's still in jest from Todd as well. Now, I'm not a huge Wonder Woman fan, but hey, I like to give my opinion. I'm a big supporter of Mary Elizabeth Winstead and would love to see her take on the character. She'll probably blow up after Scott Pilgrim, so who knows if it would ever happen. Also, Jennifer Love Hewitt is gorgeous, and I think she'd at least look good. Anyways, that's my pick, Ms. Winstead. Dangerous Memories loves you, Todd. Yeah, well, we love Dangerous Memories, too. What do you think about Mary Elizabeth Winstead?
It's tough to say, and this is going to sound really like, I don't know, I don't want to say it. I just don't know. I haven't seen enough of... like, all the Scott Pilgrim stuff, I've seen her face and stuff, and I don't know. I don't know her body type. Not to say that that really matters, but, you know, with Wonder Woman, I don't know. I don't know. Part of me says I have no clue. And so, like, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I haven't really seen her act in much either, so she kind of falls into the unknown category, but Todd's right. Scott Pilgrim might give her that necessary boost.
That's gonna give her a boost. Yeah.
Let's see. Next comes in from our resident Lost expert, Doug Clinton. He says, I still think Marina, please tell me if I'm saying this wrong, because you would probably know and I wouldn't. Marina Beckerin?
You think you are saying it correct, actually.
I still think Marina Beckerin would be great, even though Joss Whedon isn't on the project anymore. And she's another one to me that I'm not as familiar with, but since I hear the name Joss Whedon in there, I assume you're more familiar with.
Yeah, she's from Firefly, and she does, when Joss Whedon did write the script a couple of years ago, Warner Brothers had him write a treatment, and they eventually decided not to go with it. But I guess that was his person that he had envisioned as being Wonder Woman. And I mean, she looks the part, and I think she could do a bang-up job acting. It's just the problem that no one really knows who she is.
Right, right.
Well, I think she's on V now.
She is on V, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But other than that, I mean, but again, that would be kind of an unknown. So I don't know. I could see that. That would be pretty close to my pick, but.
All right. Some interesting answers there. That's the end of our emails. Did you happen to remember yours at all? Or?
No.
No.
I read it somewhere, or someone said something. And I'm like, oh, that, and now I don't remember it. So.
All right. Someday, I'll rehash the answers we gave last episode in case people didn't hear it. My co-host last week, Mike Wally Reinfleisch, gave the name Diora Baird, which I thought was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
She definitely has the body type. If she dyed her hair darker,
definitely,
she could pull that off. My pick for Wonder Woman was Bridget Regan from Legend of the Seeker.
I agree 100,000%. That's what it was. Thank you.
Yeah, I think she looks the part to a T, like 100%. And she's shown her acting and her action chops in Legend
exactly.
of the Seeker.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm seriously not trying to just jump on your bandwagon. But no, I agree, because when I saw her on, I don't watch the show, but I had seen a couple clips of it, and I'm like, wow, she really looks like, and I know people have been saying on for Smallville, if they ever did Wonder Woman, she would be perfect, and I'm like, yeah, she really does look like she could pull off Wonder Woman.
Speaking of which, Serinda Swan, who plays Zatanna in Smallville, probably is not a bad choice either, though I don't know, I believe she's a model, first and foremost.
I don't know if she could pull off the lead acting right. Yeah. I mean, she's decent on Smallville, but I don't know, being given the lead role would be, I don't know.
Right. Smallville has some good acting, but overall they can cast some guest people who...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You can, so I don't know.
I agree. She's great for the role of Zatanna, but we probably should leave her there. All right, then. We are going to move right into our geek outs and freak outs for this week. So first and foremost, what are you geeking out over, Brian?
Yay!
Let's see. Pretty much... So many things now. Pretty much my most was the Green Lantern movie panel, which I don't know if we're going to talk about later. But that was big time geek out. Other than that, was pretty much the Marvel movie panel at Comic-Con 2 with the Avengers stuff, geek out. So stuff like that.
Yeah, Comic-Con in general was a huge geek out. And actually the first thing I listed on my geek outs is simply being a geek. Because I don't know, it's times like Comic-Con that I really am thankful for the things that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I'm not a sports fan. I'm at the same time, I'm also not the prototypical geek, I guess you could say. But the things that I this is like a Super Bowl event for me.
No, it really is. It's like a it's basically like a celebration of like everything that we're like into, and it's just like it's that one time a year where all the news comes out at once, and like everyone's excited, and it's just this like I can't describe it. It's this like feeling of like anticipation of like everything and stuff comes out. So
yeah, and as you slowly pour over the news feeds and everything, and you see all these things slowly come out. Like, we talked about several things here and there that gave us goosebumps throughout the Comic-Con that are just like, oh my goodness, I can't believe they're actually showing that or doing that in that movie. And it's just a fan's dream for all that stuff. The only thing that would be greater, of course, is to be there, but that's what New York Comic-Con is for us. So, and we get that more than once a year. San Diego's the big one, but we get all the cons. I mean, there's going to be some news coming out of New York, too, in October, and that's going to be a thrill to be at.
True.
Anything else you want to talk about, geek outs?
Trying to think. What else was there? No, just the that was pretty much my list. Just the general Comic-Con stuff.
All right. Well, the other thing I know is something that we both share because I purchased Batman Under the Red Hood the other day.
Yes.
That came out on Tuesday, and oh my goodness, such a good movie. What did you think of it?
I watched it last night, and I was blown away. Just really, really talked to the grittiness of Batman. A thing of Batman I haven't seen in a while in animation, like very dark, very, very, very deep story, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and the action scenes were incredible as well.
Agreed. I have to give DC a lot of credit with their new path that they're taking. I think this is the 8th DC Universe animated release. And their decision to go in the direction of releasing things with a PG-13 rating and really gearing it towards a more adult audience, I think was a brave one, but a very wise one.
Yeah, because you couldn't, if you tried to really like, you know, PG that, and you couldn't, you can't tell the story without like, there's just certain things in there that you can't dumb down to just like a general audience. There's too many things. So,
right, yeah. There's a certain, and I mean, that's the way Batman comics are anyway. It's more adult oriented. So taking that and putting that in a form that will be appreciated by that audience is awesome. And I love that.
And I mean, the kids have, for the younger viewers, they have Batman Brave and the Bold. So I mean,
right. And I have to say, I've watched an episode or two of that, and I'm not really a fan.
I agree 100%. I didn't want to say anything, but I saw one episode, and I was like, okay, this is definitely not for me. It's like the 60s Batman. I'm like, all right. But without the tongue-in-cheek, I'm just like, I don't know.
Right. So for the kids, you have Batman, Brave and the Bold. Yeah. You have that series, The Batman, that I also really wasn't big on. So you have those, and then for the adult crowd, we have Batman the Animated Series.
That's what this reminded me of. It was definitely like a callback to that. I definitely that tone, and I mean, even pushed it a little farther, but I really enjoyed it. The one thing I want to mention, though, is I was very what's the word? I was very leery of the voice changing of Joker and Batman because I'm so used to Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy. But I have to say, I wasn't horrified. I mean, I think I enjoyed both. It was a different take on them, and it didn't hamper my enjoyment of the movie. And I was pleasantly surprised, I think.
I agree, and I talked about that a little bit in my review, which you can see on the site. But yeah, Bruce Greenwood, I was a little weary on when I heard the voice in the trailer. But the voice in the trailer doesn't sound necessarily like the voice in the movie.
No.
He did an amazing job. And there were times that I could have sworn it was Kevin Conroy. He was so good at it.
Yeah, he definitely kept the same tone level, which is very important.
Yeah, and like you said, having John DiMaggio replacing Mark Hamill as the Joker in this, he did not attempt to just do an imitation of Hamill doing Joker. He had his own take on it, and I likened it to a cross between Hamill's Joker and Heath Ledger's portrayal in The Dark Knight.
There's more of a different vein, and maybe that's why they did it, because I think if you had Mark Hamill's Joker is so like iconic, but the fact they did do the change made it a little more like, wow, this is a different sort of Joker than we've seen before, and I don't know, maybe a little more psychotic, a little more, you know, crossing the line than, not to say Mark Hamill's doesn't, but you know what I mean? I don't know.
Right. He was much darker, and it was more of a dark comedy than a laugh-out-loud Joker. And even though I'll always love Hamill's Joker, this was a very refreshing take on it.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, Neil Patrick Harris's Nightwing was good. I'm trying to think who else was. Where's the what was? Oh, Jensen Ackles was great as Red Hood. I
Absolutely.
thought great job.
Yeah, so absolutely go out, and if you haven't seen that,
Definitely.
definitely go see it. And I was happy too to go into my local Best Buy, and I saw a notice. I went over first to the big list of Blu-rays, and there was a notice that said, "We apologize for any confusion, but every Best Buy store only gets two copies of the limited edition that comes with a small Red Hood figurine." I didn't see any there, and I was kind of bummed. So I walked over to the new releases section, and there was one copy left. So I scooped that up
Ooh.
immediately. I was very happy.
Yeah, I got mine too, but for some reason I went to the one in one in New Hampshire. They had like 15 of them, and I don't know if there must have been like some sort of what do you call it, shipping error or something, because they had quite a bit with the figure. But I did hear also from another friend that the exact same thing happened, that they only had two in their Best Buy. So I don't know. It's weird.
Either that or they're playing us and they're saying they have two so that I'll scoop it up immediately. Although it didn't cost any more,
No.
so.
No, that was the yeah, it was like sweet. And I don't know if you when Superman Batman Public Enemies came out, they had a small Batman one that looks really awesome next to it because it's
I
the
have
exact
it.
same stuff. Of course you
Absolutely.
do.
Of course I do. I also have the one that came with Green Lantern First Flight. Yep. Awesome. All right, so then we are going to move right into freakouts.
Oh, freak out!
What do you got?
I have absolutely nothing, sir. No, no, I don't really. Freakouts, I don't have anything.
No? Okay,
So
well, I do have one.
well, there you go.
And I'm not sure. I talked about it a little bit before. I'm still kind of freaking out over the fact that Marvel didn't pony up the money to get Edward Norton back for the Incredible, not for Incredible Hulk, from the Incredible Hulk into the Avengers. Mark Ruffalo has been confirmed as Bruce Banner, and that's okay. It's growing on me, him in that role, but it's still not Norton, and that bothers me.
Yeah, I did go through a couple of days where I was slightly annoyed, and I mean, you hear the two sides. Other people are saying, well, he was hard difficult to work with, he has an ego, blah blah blah. And then there's the other side of like, why don't you just pony up the money? And so I don't know. Probably the truth is somewhere in the middle. But yeah, I would have loved to see Edward Norton more than Mark Ruffalo, but you know what? You can't change things. I mean, for what it's worth, we'll see how he does. But I mean, if this is what it's the third time they've recast Bruce
Yeah,
Banner, so
yeah.
I don't know.
I know it's a wait and see type thing. I'm sure he'll do a great job. He's a great actor, but
At least the only thing is we have a bunch of other people that have played their characters, you know what I mean? They have all the recurring characters that are the same. So hopefully it won't be. It's not like they're doing a new Hulk movie with just him. So,
right, that's true. Although it might not be a bad idea to do that first before the Avengers, just to give
true.
us a new backstory and a new history. Because, like we said before, when you take away that same actor, even though a film came before them and you're expected to take that history with them, it just doesn't translate over the way it should.
No.
All right, so that's our geek outs and freak outs. In that case, we're going to move on into our favorite game to play, which is Top 3.
Woohoo!
Three, two, one.
Top 3. As I've said before, it's kind of geared towards our co-host. I'm fairly familiar with most of your interests and try to give you a category that fits into that. You don't have to place them into order. Just give me your top 3 that would fit into this category. So being the Whedonite that you are, I'm going to ask you, what are the top 3 characters from the Whedon universe?
Oh, jeez. Oh,
Oh yeah, I'm putting you on the spot big time. I knew this one would be very thought-provoking.
Oh, man. this is gonna might need to take a 20-minute break
That's okay.
now.
Give us your thought process while you're considering.
I'm pretty much I'm going through the thing is Buffy's my favorite, and that's what I first discovered. So then that always seems to come to the top for me. But I also enjoy Angel and Firefly and Dollhouse. So it's like there's all these thoughts going through my head. But I mean, let's be honest, everyone pretty much knows my favorite character of his is Xander Harris from Buffy, so he would definitely be at the top
All
because that
right.
was the first that was my discovery of Buffy was through that character, so definitely at the top. Next would probably be, I'd say, Wesley from Buffy and Angel. More of his take in Angel. He was for a character, his arc, his character arc was the best out of any character from I think. But from starting at the beginning and going to the end, he had the best arc.
I agree. I actually didn't watch Buffy, but I did watch a majority of Angel, and he was a strong character in that show.
Yeah, because especially if you had seen Buffy, he was like such a buffoon in Buffy, and then take him all the way to the end of Angel, and he's like a completely different character, and it was just, yeah. Third, I'm trying to think. It's tough. I want to say his name is blanking on me. I know I don't think you watch Dollhouse, so you probably can't help me.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. Sorry.
But the kid, the scientist, what's his name? I can't think of his name, but the kid from Dollhouse that I forget his name, but he was my he had certain qualities that were Xander like on Dollhouse. I enjoyed him. But yeah, so that's my third, cuz I can't think of there's so many others that are like fighting for third, but I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that. Yes, sure. If I think of his name, if it comes to me, I'll say it. But I can't think of it. And I sound like a horrible Joss Whedon fan. I'm like, yeah, I'm a Joss Whedon fan. I just can't think of his name right now.
That's right. Suck. Hey, it's not as easy being put on the spot when you're actually here. All right, then.
But yeah.
That's top three for today. We're getting right about time for our first commercial break, but before we do, I want to give out this week's poll question, which goes along a little bit with what we talked about. We talked about Batman Under the Red Hood, and I would like to ask the audience, what is your favorite animated superhero movie? So, not just animated movie, not superhero movie, it must be an animated superhero movie. Doesn't have to be theatrical release, it could be a straight-to-DVD, as Batman Under the Red Hood was, but that is my question I pose to you. Does any jump to mind for you right away, Brian?
Yep. Right as you said it, I was like, oh, I know the answer.
Go ahead.
You want me to say it now?
Absolutely.
Oh, all right. Batman Mask of the Phantasm. That's my pick.
That's a very strong choice, and yeah. I probably concur with you. That was, as I mentioned to the Dangerous Memories boys,
yeah,
up until the release of Batman Begins, that was my favorite superhero movie in general.
Yeah, I mean, you can put it up with live action stuff and it still holds up. It capitalizes everything about Batman, and it's just it's not a kid's movie. It's just everything that I remember seeing it as a kid when I was younger, and I still thought it was awesome. Like, it's just, and you watch it now and it still holds up. It's just amazing.
Right. And yeah, just absolutely amazing, fantastic movie. So Batman Mask of the Phantasm is our choice, but we want to know what your choice is. So send that to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com. Or if you're on Twitter, you can send it to @GeekGeneration. We're going to take a quick break right now, and we will be right back.
We all know the best podcast in the world is
The Geek Generation.
But what you might not know is there are other ones, such as...
Like you and me, Hector and Todd. Dangerous Memory.
That's right.
We're reviewing the AFI Top 100, and we're bringing you new episodes every Wednesday. Come check us out on www.hectorandtodd.com.
Hello, listeners. Do you shop on Amazon.com? Would you like to support the Geek Generation while shopping on Amazon.com? Well, then I have good news for you, because you can do both without spending any additional money. All you need to do is visit www.thegeekgeneration.com and find the Amazon button on the front page. Click the button, do your normal shopping, and check out. You have spent no additional money, but you have earned us a commission, so I thank you. Please make this a regular part of your Amazon.com shopping routine.
Hi, this is Hector from Dangerous Memories, and you're listening to The Geek Generation.
We are back on The Geek Generation, and it's time to go right into news. First big piece of news, and the majority of this is coming from San Diego Comic-Con that happened over the last weekend. The Avengers and Marvel Films panel gave us a lot of important information. Even though it wasn't much of a question, Joss Whedon was confirmed as the director. Jeremy Renner was confirmed by Joss Whedon originally as playing Hawkeye, and then reconfirmed during the panel. And last but not least, Mark Ruffalo was confirmed as Bruce Banner / The Hulk. Your thoughts?
We covered the Hulk stuff. I'm kind of waiting and seeing. I guess it was the best choice for the moment, I guess is what you could say. I mean, it was funny. I don't know if you actually watched the video of the announcements, but Robert Downey Jr. Screwed up and he's like reprising his role as Bruce Banner, Mark Ruffalo, and I'm just like, wow, that was a really bad faux pas right there. But
see, I don't even know if that was so much of a mistake as it was a little joke.
Oh, it could be. I see. I took it as just like so. I was expecting like, wait, is Edward Norton coming? Oh no, it's not Edward Norton. But let's see. Obviously, I love the choice of Joss Whedon. It still hasn't really processed in my mind the fact that a guy. I mean, as much as a fan of his as I am, it blows my mind. I mean, he really has no big budget movie. I mean, he made Serenity, which, let's be honest, was a bomb. I mean, he has no big movie experience, so I'm still shocked that they're actually going with him. I think he can handle, and I think it's going to be awesome, but I'm just like, wow, really? They're actually doing this? It still kind of like seems like it's not happening, but...
Right, and when that rumor first popped up, it was really out of left field.
Yeah, because people are like, what? Like, why the hell would they give it to him? And, I mean, obviously he did write an X-Men comic for Marvel for 2 years, but other than that, it's not like he's, like, definitely in the Marvel family or anything. So it's definitely – I guess he said at his panel at Comic-Con that the real reason he really enjoyed it is that Marvel Studios seems to be really giving him – not free reign, but, like, not really being like, you need to conform to this, you need to conform to this, like – which I think is a breath of fresh air for him since dealing with Fox and all the BS on his TV series that he has usually, where they pretty much kind of quality control what he wants to do and stuff. So I think that might be part of it. But
and the thing I've liked so much about the choice, I mean, I'm not the Joss Whedon fan that you are. I can't say I'm not a fan of his, though, because I do enjoy some of his work. I'm just not as familiar with it. But he reminds me a lot of Jon Favreau, in the sense that he seems very humble about it. He has a sense of humor about it, and he appears to be very much of a geek himself. So,
he knows. Trust me, he knows. Like, he's a huge comic book fan. He knows like probably the minute facts about Avengers that even I don't know. But yeah, he definitely is definitely. I think he's going to bring it. And plus, I mean, another important thing to me is his dialogue. What draws me into most of his stuff is the way he has dialogue and characterization. So that's obviously in a movie with this many big characters and big actors. I think that's going to be an important, you know, just not to have a giant action director, you know, just big set pieces and stuff. I think the fact they went with someone who knows like dialogue and characterization is very important for a film like this.
Yeah, that'll be very interesting to see how he goes with it. It seems like Marvel's taking a similar approach to when they had Jon Favreau, like I said, and they're taking a chance on someone new and with a similar mindset. So I think that'll be really strong in the end. Let's see. Next thing we have the Green Lantern. We'll go into the Green Lantern movie. Green Lantern panel. I was going to cover Thor first, so we'll do Thor first.
All right, go back to Thor. Yeah,
makes more sense. Might as well. Let's go in a logical progression here. The Thor movie, a lot of stuff came out there. Marvel displayed a mystery box at the beginning of Comic-Con that they unveiled on the second day, which contained the helmets from the movie that will be worn by Thor, Odin, and Loki. They had a large throne of Odin set up, which they opened up and revealed the Destroyer. And they also uncovered the Infinity Gauntlet, which was a huge surprise to me.
Which was like completely out of left field. Like I saw it. I'm like, did I just read what I? At first, I thought it was a prop for like a collectible they were making. And I'm like, no, that says it's for the Thor. I'm like, what? Like just for those who don't know, the Infinity Gauntlet is like especially in the '90s. It was when I was a kid. That was like the coolest, quote unquote, cosmic weapon in comic books. Like they had a whole series called the Infinity Gauntlet that included all the Marvel characters and stuff, and that's really when I first got into comics. So it's really like a holy crap, they're using the Infinity Gauntlet type thing. Like it's a pretty, I don't know how much they're gonna get into it, but I mean, just for like a kind of an Easter egg for geeks, it's pretty cool.
Absolutely. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Infinity Gauntlet was something that just kind of showed up at the end of the movie to tease the sequel.
Yeah,
but it's still really cool to know what's in there. Another big piece of Thor news is the leaked trailer that hit the internet this morning from Comic-Con, and
I watched it right before we did this, and I was my head exploded. Like seriously, I was just like, I can't form words. Like I for the past couple of weeks when I've seen the pictures, couple of pictures they leaked of, I think it was Odin, and some of it was like, okay, this looks kind of 80s Flash Gordon sort of cheesy, but when I saw this trailer, any doubts I had was thrown out the window.
Yeah, and
just amazing.
It looks absolutely awesome. One of the things that I thought was the coolest was how well Marvel is connecting these movies together, because you see in the trailer, Thor going into a clearly S.H.I.E.L.D.-built facility because at that after-credit scene in Iron Man 2 when they go and see Thor's hammer, and I'm not even going to include in spoiler alert here because it's not integral to the plot and it's after the credits and it's been long enough. You see Thor's hammer sitting there in the middle of the desert, and clearly they've dug around it, and it's up on like a pedestal of rock. It's just in there. So that's clearly attaching it to that scene that we saw from Iron Man 2.
Yeah, and they also have the same S.H.I.E.L.D. agent from Iron Man 1 and 2 in the trailer. So he's going to be in Avengers as well. But yeah, so he's sort of tying the movies together. And what else was I going to say about the trailer? It just looks pretty amazing all around. Just the special effects, the acting, the scenery just blows me away. Looks nothing. I was starting to feel a little weird, like I said, but this is just like, wow.
Yeah, it looks so great. And I apologize to those that are probably listening to this now, because by the time this podcast gets up today,
It's probably going to be gone.
But
that's why I was like, oh crap, I actually thought it might have already been gone when I clicked on it. I'm like, is it gonna? Oh, shoot, it's still there.
Yeah, Marvel has pulled the leaked trailer from several sites already. This may, however, cause them to release the full quality one sooner than they would, because a lot of us have seen it anyway, so...
At first, I thought it was the one they showed at Comic-Con, but then I realized, nope, this has definitely got a lot more than the 30-second clip they showed at Comic-Con. So, yeah, this is definitely a teaser trailer that's going to be attached to something, because it's got a lot more than what they showed at Comic-Con.
Agreed. Can't wait for that. All right, now we'll go into the Green Lantern, which I think was one of the better panels of the whole show from the stuff that came out of it.
I was just reading the transcripts and trying to read what was going on. I was getting goosebumps, just like, this is going to be... And I'm a pretty big Green Lantern fan, but he's not like my favorite character, but it just sounds pretty awesome.
So let's see what we have here. Director Martin Campbell said this about the costume, quote, "The costume is always a work in progress. We have the black and green, and we lost the white gloves. We felt it looked cooler and far more interesting without them. There are certain lines on the costume, and it's more like a skin on GL than a costume. The lines are all lines of musculature, which our designer came up with. It is a work in progress. It will eventually look incredibly cool," which leads me to believe that that picture that we saw on the cover of Entertainment Weekly, like I had speculated, is not the final draft of the costume.
It just amazed me that so many people condemned the movie from one shot of the costume. Like, oh, this movie's gonna be as bad as Batman Robin, it looks horrible. And I'm like, seriously, you're basing an entire movie on one magazine cover? I was just like, and that's the good and the bad of the fanboys. I mean, if they don't like something, they will just say it's gonna be the worst thing ever. And I was just like, seriously? And like, I mean, even if that is the final costume, which I agree with you, I don't think it is, it seems like they're going for more, like the director said, more like a skin, like a symbiote type thing coming out of the ring that covers him. And I mean, it's got like the light projections and the musculature, so I think it looks pretty cool. The white gloves, I understand too. I mean, it whatever. We'll see how it looks. We'll see how it, I mean, like, everyone's going by a stock photo of it, so.
Right,
we'll
and the white gloves I'm not going to miss. And no. I've seen many versions of Hal's costume that don't incorporate them.
Yeah, the what was it? The first Flight movie, the animated movie, didn't have white gloves.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see a version of that costume. And the one thing that is really making me think that this is not the final version is because the quote from Martin Campbell says that there's black and green in the costume, and the picture we've seen is pretty uniformly green.
Yeah.
So I am excited to see a final version of the costume, and I'm hoping that that looks a lot closer to the comic book version.
Yeah, agreed.
Next thing, someone asked Ryan Reynolds, will we see Ion or Parallax in these films? And he replied, quote, "Parallax is in it. I better be able to say that. He's the emotional manifestation of fear in this." Well, that's a big bomb drop.
Yeah, there have been rumblings weeks ago that Jeff Johns or someone close to him had speculated that Parallax, Parallax, and part of me, I don't know, do you know all about Parallax? All right. So I don't know. Part of me wonders if, I hope they just kind of tease it, because it's almost too much to put in the first movie, I think. I mean, it would have been better, I think, to hold it off for a sequel, because then once you get Parallax and the yellow entity and all that, I don't know. It seems that's my only worry, that they're going to try to cram too much into one movie, but we'll see. We'll see. But it was definitely a cool, wow, they're really going to put that in there, and that's really cool.
Yeah, I had the same first thought of you as you did. I mean,
yeah.
You want to spend a lot of time, especially in an origin story, developing the characters and trying to fit too many into the first movie is way too much to do. So I do hope Parallax is more of, like you said, a fleeting image than necessarily an integral part of the movie.
And I mean, we have to remember, I mean, we know Green Lantern, and most of the audience will know Green Lantern, but I mean, for the general audience, they're going to have pretty much no clue. Most people know of Green Lantern, oh, it's that guy with the green suit in the ring. So they really need to, kind of like Iron Man, you need to sort of set up the story and the character and make sure you spend enough time so that the audience can get invested in the character before you start throwing in all the, you know, the comic book Easter eggs and geek stuff. Because, I mean, if you do too much of that, people are going to be confused and not care. So.
Agreed. The last thing I wanted to talk about from the Green Lantern panel was certainly the highlight of it for many fans, and that was when this little boy gets up to the microphone wearing a Green Lantern t-shirt and a Green Lantern ring and asks Ryan Reynolds if he would recite, or what it feels like to say the Green Lantern oath. And after he eventually does do that, they kind of flash their rings. You can't see it in the official Warner Brothers clip, but I did post another one from the con itself. And it's, you see, awesome. The kid quickly flashes ring at Ryan, and Ryan flashes it back, and it's like the cutest moment ever.
Yeah, it really is. It's just awesome.
Yeah, and I have the audio from that poll, so I'm going to play that for the audience right now.
Sweet.
This is a question for Ryan. What does it feel like to say the Green Lantern oath?
My God, you're the cutest. It sounds a little like this. In brightest day, in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power. Green Lantern's light.
All right, so like I said before, that was one of those moments from Comic-Con that just gave me goosebumps immediately when I heard him say that.
I mean, even watching it so many times I've heard it, it's just, you get, like, I get goosebumps. I've heard it so many times, it's crazy. So it's just one of those things. I don't know. I don't know if it's the fact that he's, the way he's saying it, it's just like one of those picture-perfect things. Just awesome.
Definitely. And even though I wasn't on board necessarily for his casting to begin with, it's just one of those little things that draws you into the character, and now I'm actually excited to see him do that. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think, thinking back, as I was going to say, I think in the long run, it's probably going to work out better that they cast him, because I think he's going to draw in a lot of the female fan base that doesn't know who Green Lantern is, and a lot of, he's one of those actors that I think males and females, like, he's not threatening to males where they think he's funny and he's awesome and the girls think he's attractive. So I think it's going to work out well to the fact with the box office that it's going to draw in a lot of business, I think. So I think in the long run, people were, I was one of them saying, you know, he doesn't really look like Hal Jordan. He seems to be, but you know what? I think he's going to pull it off.
Right. And after seeing that fan made trailer that went around on YouTube for a while, that had Nathan Fillion in this role as Hal Jordan, I really, really wanted him. But you're right. Ryan Reynolds is very accessible to a wide audience. And
And I mean,
probably made a good casting ultimately.
Yeah. And he seems to, you know, really be into the character and know his shit and, like, wants to please the hardcore fans too. So, I mean, I think it's going to be good.
Agreed. And speaking of YouTube, I posted the clip of the Warner Brothers panel for Green Lantern on there, and pretty much every comment, of course, the way the internet does work, every comment is commenting, and it basically said, look, boobs, because Blake Lively was wearing this shirt that was pretty much wide open, which was
hysterical. it was like wow, you're gonna wear that to Comic-Con, awesome. She knows her fan base, apparently. But no, it's pretty blatantly epic. If you even just look at some of the stills, it's like, wow, they were interviewing her on I think it was G4, and like, it was just like, wow, like, it's seriously, I've never, it's pretty 3, wow.
Yeah, it was funny, and it is... She clearly knows the fan base, and she knows the people that are there at Comic-Con, and she knows how to get the attention of every single person there. So it worked for what she was going for, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Moving on from the Green Lantern panel, we have some Underworld news. At Comic-Con, Len Wiseman was stopped by IGN, and Len Wiseman is husband to Underworld star Kate Beckinsale. He said that there is writing taking place, and there are talks going on in relation to making an Underworld 4. When asked if Beckinsale would be back, he answered, quote, "Yes, that's the plan. We're both waiting to see what kind of story comes together. It's just getting the script to a certain place where we're both happy with it."
Interesting. Was the third movie a prequel? Is that why she wasn't in it?
The third movie was a prequel. I believe the reason that they made that movie was because perhaps Beckinsale wasn't interested in doing a third, and they decided to make a prequel and keep the franchise going. But it's nice to see that they are going to pick up from 2 and continue that story, and we will perhaps see Beckinsale back to fill that role.
Nice, because, yeah, I enjoyed the first 2, but I never saw the third one.
Yeah, I actually thought the second was stronger than the first, too. You don't see that a lot with sequels, but I do think the second was a stronger movie.
I agree, I think. I mean, I haven't seen them in a while, but I'm pretty sure I agree.
Next piece of news is that Carl Urban is the new Judge Dredd. Carl Urban played Dr. Leonard McCoy in the recent Star Trek reboot. Or I guess I shouldn't even call that a reboot, as it was more or less a continuation of the other
movies.
Yeah,
it's half and half, pretty much, but right. Yeah.
He confirmed that he'll be Judge Dredd on a New Zealand movie show. He will be keeping the helmet on, as the character of Dredd does throughout the movie, and said, quote, "Dredd is enigmatic, the faceless representation of justice. His prevailing attitudes, his strength of moral character, and the strength of his actions are what speak volumes for that character." Judge Dredd will start filming sometime this fall. So what do you think about that casting?
It's gotta be better than the last Judge Dredd movie they tried to attempt to make in what I think it was 1994, 1995 with Rob Schneider and Sylvester Stallone, and all I remember from that movie is I am the law, and it just makes me laugh hysterically every time I see it on TV because he was so he tried his best, and I understand why they cast him back then, but it was he was just that. I mean, it had like a really good kid. It had like Diane Lane. It had like all these people in it, and it was just, you go watch it, rewatch it, and it's an abomination. I don't even know, it's just, but it was definitely in that time period where they just were pumping out. It was at the very end of the Batman and Robin. It was before Batman. It was at the time of the the comic movies weren't that popular, so they were just throwing big names into. They made barbed wire, a lot of those really bad movies.
Yeah, and similar to what we talked about before, I mean, Sylvester Stallone clearly wasn't the best casting for Judge Dredd, but they did need a name that big because comic movies were not in the mainstream as much as they are today.
No, it's completely different. And I mean, I like the casting because, I mean, he's been pretty solid. Carl Urban's been pretty solid in everything I've seen him in. And I think, like you said, keeping the helmet on is a pretty cool thing for him to say. I mean, because a lot of actors would never do that because they feel that it's constraining and they can't act through just leaving, having half your face or just your chin and mouth open.
Yeah, it feels very humble. I get the perception that most Hollywood actors would be a little more vain than that, and I'm assuming that's one of the big reasons Stallone would have wanted to take the helmet off, but it's nice to see someone cast in the role that has some loyalty to the character.
It's just going to be interesting. I mean, it's all about the story. I mean, the last movie's storyline, I don't even remember how, I just remember it was really bad, and there was some sort of I don't know if there was a clone. It was something really stupid, and it was really bad. And Rob Schneider was hamming it up. So I'm just hoping that I'm sure it's a different time now, that it's probably going to be played a little more serious. I mean, I don't know much about Judge Dredd. What I know is bits and pieces. So I guess I shouldn't be the one saying, that wasn't a really good plot for the last one. I don't know. It may have been. Exactly like the comic. I don't know, but I'm thinking not.
Yeah, I think it's been pretty maligned by the hordes of Dredd fans that are out there.
Yeah, yeah.
On to one of the other biggest successes, I think, that came out of Comic-Con was the Smallville panel. Lot of awesome stuff coming out of this. Namely, crazy. the teaser trailer that they showed that was essentially a recap of all the seasons that came beforehand, literally saying season 1, boom, all the big things, season 2, all the big things, and ending with season 10 and giving us a look at some things that would be happening there, including returns of a lot of popular big characters, as well as finally seeing the Superman suit in the box.
Yep. And the crazy thing is that I was reading that teaser from season 10 is only from the first two episodes, because they've only filmed the first two episodes. So the fact that all that cool stuff they show is only from the first two episodes of the season is like craziness.
That's going to be insane. I cannot wait for Smallville to return.
I mean, I guess I think even episode two is like already they bring Hawkman in, and it's like, wow, holy crap, because they show Hawkman in the teaser trailer. So
they do. Speaking of people coming back or new people, we had speculated that Darkseid would be the villain based on the appearance of Granny Goodness in the season finale, and that definitely is the case. However, they are going to adjust his character a little bit, as Smallville tends to do, to make it fit into that universe that they've created. Geoff Johns said that he'll be writing an episode that will introduce Blue Beetle and Booster Gold to the Smallville universe, so that's pretty cool.
That's cool. Very cool.
Tom Welling made a comment on Michael Rosenbaum saying, quote, "I know he's thinking about it. I know he knows that we want him, and we don't feel like we can end it without him," which I think is essential.
Yeah, he needs to come back. It will break me in half if he doesn't come back. Like you can't end the show without Lex Luthor. And he is such an iconic Lex Luthor. Like he's my favorite Lex Luthor of all time. So, and I make no bones about that. So, I mean, I'm hoping that he'll come to. I'm sure. I mean, at least he knows. Before he felt like kind of slighted that, you know, that they used body doubles and stuff in the past couple of seasons when they used Luthor. So I'm hoping that they can mend their fences, and I think he'll do the right thing and come back. I'm sure at least the last episode, I would think.
Right,
so
it has to end with some sort of connection between Superman and Lex Luthor to really believe that we're going into the Superman universe now.
I mean, another thing I want to mention is I think it was yesterday I saw on I don't know if it was on TV or online, but WB. Wow, I'm going back in time now. The CW started airing a clip to promote Smallville this season, and it says Smallville takes flight, and they're trying to really tease that you're going to see him flying. I think everyone thought, oh, he's going to fly in the last episode, but no, it looks like he's going to fly. I don't know if in the first episode or soon, or, and I mean, there was another interview from Comic-Con on some other site. I think it was on my Twitter feed somewhere that someone interviewed Tom Welling, and they asked him, they're like, oh, so you're going to actually put on the suit, and how does it feel? And he kind of coyly, he didn't deny that he was going to. So, and he sort of said, you know, it's a big honor to put it on and, you know, be Superman. So I don't know. I'm starting to think that he's going to put it on before the last episode. I think they might just go, you know, balls to the wall and just go all out in the last season and have him, you know, be Superman. And I mean, Lois says the name Superman in the trailer they showed, so I don't know.
Yeah, I would absolutely love to see that. And they have speculated in the past that we were finally going to be seeing flight, and then we saw that it was really like just him jumping, or was him in another form flying, and they've led us around and kind of dangled that carrot for a while, so who knows what we're actually going to see. But I agree, at some point they have to really separate the Superman from the Clark Kent and get him.
And I mean, it's from all intents and purposes, it seems like this is, because I mean, they're saying, I think they said at the panel that like this is going to be the season where he becomes the hero we all know. So I mean, it would make sense. And I mean, they teased the costume at the end of last season. So I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked to see, you know, him put on the costume at some point. Maybe in episode four, the 200th episode, which is the big, 200th episode, which makes. They're really promoting it, saying that there's going to be a lot of past characters coming back and a lot of big things, because I think, and I'm probably wrong because someone's probably going to email you and go, Brian doesn't know what he's talking about. But no, they're supposedly, if you count all the seasons and the end of the season, it will make Smallville the longest running sci-fi show of all time, which would be 10 seasons and whatever, 200 episodes plus. So I might be wrong, but if I am, email Rob and tell him.
Yeah, that has been reported on a lot of sites that episode would be the benchmark for making Smallville the longest running sci-fi series on television.
Yeah,
so that's
exactly
exciting. The last big piece of Smallville news is that Chloe Sullivan, the character from Smallville, is being converted to an ongoing comic book character, which was announced at the DC Universe panel.
Yep, which is very interesting, because I mean, it seems like It's been 10 years since she's been in Smallville, and I mean, I heard rumblings, I think around season 5 or 6, that they wanted to bring her into Superman in the comics, but there were some sort of legal issues they had to work out, so I don't know if it's the fact that they have to run it, if they had to get some sort of release form for Allison Mack, who plays Chloe on Smallville, to get her likeness rights, or I don't know if there was some sort of thing, because she was created for the TV series, and that's a different division of Warner Brothers, so I don't know, but eventually, apparently they finally cleared it all up, and she's going to be an ongoing character in the continuity, which makes it even more interesting because it's always been the fact that Smallville fans have like, oh, she's going to have to die before the end of the series because, you know, she's not in the Superman universe in the comics. But now that she is, I'm wondering if that's going to change anything, or we'll see, I guess. But
right, right. Oh, that should be really cool for comic book fans and especially Smallville fans to see.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there's going to be any sort of crossover. I don't, not crossover. I mean, like, fans from the show getting into the comic because of that, but probably not. But, you know, it's kind of a cool little, you know, thing. This show that something from a TV series got into the comics. I mean, it's only happened one other time in DC, and that was with Harley Quinn in the Batman animated. And then eventually they wrote her into the comics, I think, 4 years later, I think it was. So.
Okay. Next big piece of news was from the Joss Whedon and J.J. Abrams panel, in which J.J. Abrams gave his opinion on the finale, the Lost finale, actually. So nice. I do have the audio from that, so I'll play that for you right now.
Damon Lindelof, with whom I created the show, and Carlton Cuse ran the show for the 6 seasons. And it was an amazing thing when we first started. Before Carlton was even there, it was like, you know, Damon and I were in this sort of crazy panic, and we wrote this Bible of what it would be, and we wrote a whole bunch of ideas, and you sort of throw out the best ideas, and it's very optimistic, it's a huge leap of faith, and you think this is what this show could be. And a lot of those things ended up being in the series, most of them did not. And over the course of time, thank God Carlton came on board, started to work, you know, with Damon, the two of them are, I can't describe how brilliant they are, they and the other writers and directors, Jack Bender, they all started working on making this thing what it became. There were ideas that I know in the first season we thought, oh, this will be cool, and this is what it will mean, but you must be fluid and flexible, and even if you have the time to write every episode of every, you know, season for 6 seasons, you'd be doing yourself a disservice, because you would not anticipate, and could not, Michael Emerson coming on board for what was supposed to be a couple episodes. And you just realize, oh my God, man, it's critical to the story, as David and Carlton did and wrote to it. So you have to be sort of dogmatic and know what you want to do, but you also need to be entirely flexible and listen to the show and go where it tells you. And I personally, even though I know there are a lot of people who have dissenting opinions, I personally believe that Damon and Carlton kicked incredible ass and wrote an amazingly emotional episode for the finale that wrapped it up very well.
So in that clip, you hear that J.J. Abrams was very satisfied with the Lost finale. He felt that Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse did exactly what they had set out to from the beginning, and it all came out to a satisfying ending, and I agree with him. I don't know if you're a Lost fan or not.
I have not watched Lost, so I will not be able to add it or subtract anything from what you... I'm not going to be able to give my opinion, so...
That's all right. Well, that's more for... we do have a big Lost fan base, apparently, so... That's a little nugget for them. Next piece of news, we're going into some video game stuff now. This was a huge bombshell, and I did watch the whole panel for it afterwards because Capcom put it up. But they started off with a Street Fighter panel, and the creator of Street Fighter was talking about that. And all of a sudden, it was invaded by the creator of Tekken. So they had a little friendly back and forth before making the huge announcement that we are going to see a game coming out called Street Fighter Cross Tekken, which if you read it says Street Fighter X Tekken, I guess it is pronounced Cross Tekken. That's going to be released by Capcom, and it will be the Street Fighter 4 engine, including both Street Fighter and Tekken characters. However, on the flip side, they also announced that Namco Bandai, creators of Tekken, will be developing Tekken Cross Street Fighter, which will use same character base, although this time they'll be using the Tekken engine. So now Tekken fans will have the same characters in the engine they're familiar with. Street Fighter fans will have their characters in the one they're familiar with. But the bad news is that we're not going to see either of those for a couple years now.
Still, that is really crazy cool. Like, I think that's I can't think of anything that any time that's ever happened. I mean, that's like the two of the biggest fighting game franchises like ever. That's just crazy. Like, yeah. I mean, I don't think it's sort of like a Street Fighter versus Mortal Kombat, but I think, like, I mean, they even when they did DC versus Mortal Kombat, it was pretty much like a Mortal Kombat type reality. So it didn't feel like, you know, the fact that they're gonna do two separate things, so each fan base will get that's a really cool thing.
Right, and you bring up Mortal Kombat, and I was going to say the only thing to make that more epic would be if it was like Street Fighter cross Tekken cross Mortal Kombat. That's craziness, but still, they're taking arguably two of the biggest fighting franchises and meshing over their characters, and I really appreciate that they're going to be giving us two different versions of those characters for the Street Fighter fans and for the Tekken fans. It's so cool.
That is really crazy cool. Like I only knew about that they were made. I didn't realize there's gonna be two different ones. That's just really awesome.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I'm really looking forward to that. But the reason that we're not gonna see that for a couple years is because of our next piece of news, which is actually Marvel vs. Capcom 3,
nice.
Which they announced a while back. They've unveiled several of the characters so far. I did comment in the last episode that there was a leaked image out, which had Thor and Amaterasu from Okami in it, and those were confirmed at Comic-Con as new characters, nice. As well as giving us a couple trailers of each character, as well as a gameplay full combat battle, which involves all of them. And it's really an interesting thing to see the character of Amaterasu, so the small wolf really holding her own and kicking some serious butt in a fighting game. It's crazy.
Yeah, everything I've seen from there's been a couple of things on YouTube. I think there was a gameplay of Deadpool, and it made me laugh because they had him like breaking the fourth wall, and he was just it just looks awesome. I mean, Marvel vs. Capcom 2 was one of the best fighting games ever, and it just was like such a craziness. I can only imagine what this one's going to be like. It's probably going to be 20 times better. It just looks crazy.
And I love the whole new, well, I guess it's not new, but the whole concept of using these 3D rendered characters inside of a 2D, a 2D plane for the fighting field. And this game looks so beautiful. Like, the characters are rendered so well and they're accurate. Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah. It definitely is going to be a huge, huge thing when it comes out.
Yeah. I'm going to say right now, arguably, it will end up being the most popular fighting game of all time.
Oh, those are huge now. I think it would be up there. I'm like, that's pretty but now. But no, I think it will be up there. It's got to be. I mean, with all the characters and like I said, Marvel vs. Capcom 2 was pretty epic, so I can only imagine.
Yeah, and that came out 10 years ago. There's a lot of anticipation built up behind this one.
And I mean, people still play that. I mean, they released it on PlayStation Network, and I think it was one of the most downloaded games of they remastered it or whatever. But I mean, people still play that in multiplayer now on PS3. And
sure.
I mean, it shows. Yeah, so there you go. So it shows, I mean, yeah, if you make a good game, it doesn't matter how long. Especially with fighting games, because once you make a good game, it will live on for a long time. So
right. So, yeah, looking forward to that. That kind of wraps up our news block, which is good because we're just about ready to close to hit an hour for this episode. Before we wrap it up, I want to put out the poll question one more time and remind you that poll question is, what is your favorite animated superhero movie? You can send that to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com, or if you're on Twitter, you can send it to @geekgeneration. Coming up next week, I know I made a promise last week as to what would happen, but this time I actually locked someone in. And coming up next week, we have Todd Tiuli returning from Dangerous Memories to co-host.
Nice.
Todd and I are going to start a new segment as we step into the spoiler room to have an in-depth discussion of Inception, which there's plenty to discuss. And don't worry for those of you that are worried that we're going to be giving all this stuff away and it's going to interfere with the episode. We're going to do that at the very end of the episode, and there will be a brief introduction. So if you want to hear nothing about Inception, you can listen to the rest of the episode and then duck out before we step into the spoiler room. If you want to stick around for that discussion, it'll be there. You can always come back to it later. So that's the way we're going to do that from now on. To contribute to that discussion, unfortunately, I have no ability to do a live broadcast and take phone calls yet, but we do want fan feedback and have gotten a few emails already. You can give us your thoughts on the movie, your take on the twists and turns that happen throughout. So please send those into podcast@thegeekgeneration.com as well.
I will do that.
Last but not least, Brian, do you have anything you'd like to plug since you spent so much time with me here today?
Yeah, right. No, not really. I'm just No, I don't actually.
All right. Hey. I give the opportunity. You don't have to capitalize on it, but it's out there. If you like the show, again, I ask you as always to please tell your friends about it. If you want to visit the site, it is www.thegeekgeneration.com. You'll see a whole bunch of stories up there, including show notes from today's show and links to all the stories that we talked about in our news block. On the site as well, there's a button to subscribe in iTunes. While you are there, please rate the show and write a review. That does help increase our visibility on the iTunes store. We have a few ratings and reviews up there right now. There's also a donation button on the site, which I finally buckled down and bought a new microphone, which I don't have yet, clearly, but should be arriving within the next 2 weeks or so. So the donations now are going towards a digital audio recorder because New York Comic Con is coming up in October, and I want to be able to do as many interviews with fans and celebrities as I can while I'm there. So there is a progress bar, make a donation, we'll build up to that. If there are questions, comments, insults, topics you would like us to discuss on a future show, you can send those into podcast@thegeekgeneration.com or at Geek Generation on Twitter. I'm going to keep saying that over and over so people don't even have to think about it ever again.
If I suck, please let me know, because I like all these things.
Yeah. Brian wants criticism, too. It's a learning process for all of us. If you'd like to submit an article to the site, and I talked a little bit about Wally with this after the show, I can't stress this enough. It's called The Geek Generation for a reason. My goal with this whole site and this whole show was to really create a technological platform for all the many talents that are out there. And I know so many of my friends are incredibly gifted, incredibly talented, and I wanted to be able to showcase that. So really, if you are a proficient writer or even just have an opinion you'd like to show, we have a fantastic staff, Brian included, on the site that writes tremendous articles. And if you would like to contribute to that in a capacity of writing, in a capacity of perhaps generating things for the podcast, please do that. And you can send that to guest@thegeekgeneration.com. Last but not least, as always, our show theme is provided by Machine Supremacy. A link to their site can be found on our site. So until next time, thank you one more time for joining us, Brian.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was great.
Always a good time. We will see you next time on The Geek Generation.